In the Genesis account of creation in day 5 and day 6, we see once again that the order of creation is wildly out of order with the evolutionary account. Now, it begins with the things in the water, and evolutionists generally believe that life began in the oceans. Now, if you hear that, let me give you a simple question to ask them. Where did the water come from? According to the evolutionary theory of the origin of the Earth at one time was molten. And so there was no liquid water. All the water on the Earth that there would have been evaporated and gone into space. There wouldn't have been any water left on Earth. And so in order to get water, they have to argue that a bazillion comets that have water on them hit the Earth and left their water. But how does a speeding bullet hit the Earth and not evaporate the water in that process? So they don't even know where the oceans came from, let alone how life evolved from non-life in those oceans. But generally, they argue that life formed in the oceans, the first single-celled organism that was capable of self-reproduction, able to divide and reproduce itself. And eventually, these formed into fish. And the fish evolved eventually into amphibians, amphibians into reptiles, reptiles into birds, and then eventually down to mammals and human beings. And of course, this takes, according to them, billions and billions of years. So on day 5, God makes all the creatures in the waters. Now, a problem with order is that the water creatures would include reptiles that are marine reptiles, would have included marine mammals such as dolphins, whales. All of these are out of sync with the order. In fact, evolution has a crazy view of how whales originated. They believe that whales were land creatures that decided they liked swimming in the water, and eventually their legs turned into fins and these sorts of things. So, by the way, this is what your children are being taught. Birds apparently evolved from dinosaurs, and so the common theory now is that dinosaurs are not extinct. Dinosaurs are at your bird feeders. It was only certain ones that died out, but the ones that evolved into birds are the dinosaurs nowadays. So in fact, birds have been reclassified, and they're in the same category as dinosaurs. And so on day 6, we see after we have day 5, we have the marine creatures and we have the birds. We have land animals on day 6, including human beings. And again, as we saw with the plants, everything was made according to its kind. And that term there means that which is able to reproduce or hybridize. So you take two animals, they're able to breed and produce an offspring. And usually in some of the definitions, that offspring in turn must be able to reproduce. And so God puts limits, as he put with everything else, on what could happen. This morning I want to look at the concept of dinosaurs. And this is a popular topic among kids. Kids love dinosaurs. Probably most everyone in this room at one time or another had some dinosaurs that they played with. Many of you have probably seen Jurassic Park. By the way, that's never going to happen. They will never be able to make a living dinosaur, even if they find DNA, because you would have to have a mommy dinosaur in order to implant the clone to make it. So you don't have to worry. That's never going to happen. But the reason I want to talk about dinosaurs is, one, a lot of Christians don't know what to do with dinosaurs, because we're told that dinosaurs went extinct 65 million years ago. And some Christians are actually at the point where they don't believe that dinosaurs even existed. They believe it's something that evolutionists have used, and it's not true. You really can't use that, because they found millions of dinosaur fossils, millions of them. And so that's just kind of doing the ostrich technique of burying your head in the sand and pretending that dinosaurs never, ever existed. We have found dinosaur eggs. We found dinosaur embryos. We have found skin, fossilized skin of dinosaurs. So recently, in fact, they found a, this is problems for the bird evolution. They actually found a dinosaur, and it was so well preserved, they actually found three birds in its stomach. So, you know, dinosaurs evolved into birds, but dinosaurs were eating birds. And they actually know what kind, it was so well preserved, they actually know what kind of birds were in the stomach. They also tell what they ate by what they call coprolites, fossilized dung. So they know some of them ate grass, which threw evolutionists out because evolutionists thought that grass evolved actually after dinosaurs. So they can actually tell by their fossilized remains what they were eating. Okay, dinosaurs and the Bible. This is the number one tool used by evolutionists to get kids. Books, cartoons, different programs. They would hate the Flintstones, by the way, evolutionists, because if you remember the Flintstones, dinosaurs were living at the same time as human beings. In fact, their pet dog was a dinosaur. Remember Dino? Okay, and Fred Flintstone used to work down at the quarry. Instead of operating a backhoe, he operated a dinosaur. So evolutionists would hate that program because they believed that human beings and dinosaurs are separated by 64 million years. And this is very important to our presentation today because if dinosaurs were extinct millions and millions and millions of years before human beings, and it wasn't until the 1820s that they actually began finding dinosaur fossils. How did people before 1820 know what dinosaurs looked like when they would have had no idea that they even existed? Now keep that in mind because that's very important. Now, just to give you a very, very brief difference. So the evolutionists argued that they lived somewhere between 230 million to 65 million years ago. Well, according to the Bible, they were created on day six. They're land animals, and they were created about 6,000 years ago. So we see that those don't line up at all. It takes a stretch of the imagination to try to fit those together. Now, some tried to use what was called the gap theory, which argued that there was a gap between Genesis 1 verse 1 and Genesis 1 verse 2, and then another one between chapter 1 verse 2 and verse 3, that dinosaurs were actually part of the original creation, that when Satan rebelled, he polluted that earth, and then God restored the earth, and that meant the dinosaurs went extinct. Some want to put Neanderthals there as well. That if you believe that, you're believing that on a lot of faith, because there's zero exegetical data for the gap theory. So if you've been taught the gap theory, which is in the Schofield Reference Bible, there's zilch for that. Zero. Zero. So please give that one up because that one takes more faith than evidence. They believe they are evolved from archosaurs, which are basically a more primitive type of reptile type things. These evolved and branched into dinosaurs, crocodilians, so that's crocodile type things, so crocodiles, alligators, these sort of things. Pterosaurs, which are the flying reptiles, so pterodactyls and things like that. By the way, technically, these dinosaurs that are in the water and those that fly are not dinosaurs. Dinosaurs are only the land ones. So the flying ones are pterosaurs and the other ones are marine reptiles. And there's some giant ones that were in the water as well. According to the Bible, they didn't evolve. They were a direct creation of God. God made the dinosaurs, and they weren't bad. They were good. The Bible says that God looked at everything it made, and it was good. And went on in verse six, in day six and said, and everything it made was very good, including the dinosaurs. And I try to emphasize when we were reading it, guess what dinosaurs originally ate? Plants. The Bible says that all the green vegetation he had given for all the animals. Yes, they have big teeth. Go online and look up the fruit bat, by the way, which only eats fruit. And if you just saw the skull, you would think it was something like a saber-toothed tiger. It's got these big jaws on it. But God said that everything originally ate plants. And the Bible says that in the millennial kingdom, it's going to be the same way. It says that the lion will eat straw like an ox. Okay, evolution argues that they evolved into birds about sometime before 160 million years ago, because somewhere around there is where they date the first true bird. So the evolutionary process had to take place before that. So dinosaurs and birds obviously coexisted, but the birds were able to continue to evolve and to survive, whereas the dinosaurs went extinct at roughly 65 million years ago, and we don't know how they went extinct. Creationists have their own views, mostly hunted to death, but there are more than 100 different theories by evolutionists and how they went extinct. Most of you have heard something like a giant impact, like a meteorite hitting, and they went extinct. There's been things, as even in scientific journals, such as constipation. They don't know. They don't know how the dinosaurs went extinct. Okay, but we do know from the fossil record that there are more extinct animals than there are living animals. Just so you know that. It hasn't been just a few that have went extinct. Most have gone extinct. Now, the word dinosaur comes from the word dinosauria, which was coined in 1841. So some people have argued, why isn't the word dinosaur in the Bible? It should be in modern translations, but when the King James was translated in 1611, the word dinosaur didn't even exist. It wasn't for more than 200 years until it was coined by Sir Richard Owen, who was a British anatomist and paleontologist. In England, they have the famous Natural Museum there. He was the one that pushed to have that set up. It's one of the best museums in the world. And he derived the word. You probably hear that the word, it means terrible lizard, that the word dinosaur. It comes from the word deinos and the word sauros. Now, if you read what Owen said, he actually defined the word deinos as a superlative, so meaning not mean like greatest. So he translated the word not as we normally understand it, but he said fearfully great. So he's talking about how big they were, because the first dinosaurs they found were small compared to the ones they found now, but they were enormous. One of the first ones was based on a tooth, and they called it a iguanodon, which is basically like a lizard dinosaur, because its tooth looked just like an iguana's, except on a massive scale. In fact, some of them didn't know what to do with it, so they thought it was maybe giant humans and things like this. But now, dinosaurs are used by secularists as strong evidence for the unreliability of the Bible. So basically, this is what it comes down to. It's attacking the Bible. If we can prove that the Bible has mistakes in it, then we can stick evolution in there. In fact, they're the most effective way of reaching children with the gospel of millions of years and evolution. Now, how is the evidence best understood, though? And some of the stuff I'm going to share today is recent, and they don't make it known unless you go look in the science journals like Science, Nature. Nature is the most prestigious scientific journal in the world, and so this stuff is placed in these things that's not accessible to the average person. But this is stuff that should be in our schools, and it's not. Does the Bible mention dinosaurs? I would say yes. So if you have your Bible, turn to Job chapter 40. Job chapter 40. Now, if you were to look up in a bunch of commentaries, most of them are going to say that Behemoth isn't a dinosaur. But we'll read the text, and then you tell me whether you think that it's a dinosaur or what they say it is. Okay. I'll put this one up on the screen. Look at the behemoth. Behemoth, by the way, is the word that means something like cattle or beasts, and it's a plural. So here it's used as a superlative, like the beast of beasts. So your translations all put it in the same way in the Hebrew. Okay, behemoth. Which I made along with you. Now notice this, they're made at the same time. So there's not millions of years between them. He's speaking to Job. This is God speaking out of the whirlwind to Job. He said, which feeds on grass, like an ox, What strength it has in its loins. What power in the muscles of its belly. Its tail sways like a cedar. Now, we were in London on the weekend, and I was noticing, because I knew what I was speaking on, and there was all these cedar trees. And we think of cedar trees as the ones that are about this big around. In the Near East, if you go and see a cedar of Lebanon, the thing is as big around as a car. So when it says that its tail is like a cedar, it's not like those little cedar trees you may have in your backyard. These are massive, massive trees. The sinews of its thighs are close-knit. Its bones are tubes of bronze. Its limbs like rods of iron. It ranks first among the works of God, yet its maker can approach it with his sword. Now, this is how scholars interpret it. Virtually all commentators say that this is a hippopotamus. A few say it's an elephant. A French scholar argued for a water buffalo. Bernard Northrop argued that it was an extinct hornless rhinoceros. Elmer Smick, an evangelical, argued that it was mythopoeic, which means it's poetic and it's using myth. It's not meant to be understood in any literal sense whatsoever. Marvin Pope, a liberal scholar, argues that it's strictly myth. In other words, it's not believable at all, and it's not a figure of speech, but they're just drawing from pagan myths. And Henry Morris, among others, argues that it's a dinosaur. But nearly all believe it's a hippopotamus. Now, if I go back to that description, does that sound anything like a hippopotamus? Have you ever seen a hippopotamus's tail? It's a flap of skin. That's all it is. Some argue that it's an elephant. An elephant's tail looks like a fly swatter. A rhino's isn't any better. None of these look like a tree swinging around. I would say maybe a good illustration is like a telephone pole swinging around. And it says that it ranks first among the works of God. First meaning not first in order, but first as in greatest. I saw a YouTube video this week of an elephant getting into a fight with a hippopotamus. A mommy hippopotamus, her baby was getting a little too close, and the elephant got angry, and a hippopotamus is like 3 tons. They're huge. The elephant picked it up with its tail and threw it aside like it was like a pillow. So the elephant picked up the hippo and threw it aside. It looked like a little toy to the elephant. Would you describe a hippo as first among the works of God? Even of the existing animals, it's the third largest. The rhinoceros is bigger than it. And the elephant is twice the size of a rhinoceros. So if I was going by it ranks first among the works of God and it was only going to include recent animals, I would argue for the elephant. And yet almost everyone argues that it is a hippopotamus. And they all say, well, we don't know what to do with the tail. And so the argument is that the author of Job must not have known what hippos look like. And yet the text reads, when he says, look at it, as though it's sitting right there and God just saying, look at the behemoth there. It just doesn't make sense. But they don't want to argue that it's a dinosaur. And yet the dinosaur fits best with the text. Things to consider. Only a dinosaur, and I'm arguing for the sauropod type. That's the ones with the long necks and the long tails. The big giants can be described as having a tail like a cedar tree. Now, some of your translations or some of your notes want to try to change this to not that it's like a cedar tree, but that it stiffens like it. And they go to a parallel language called Ugaritic to argue this. Well, if that's even true, it doesn't work very well for these animals either, because they don't stiffen up like this. For instance, they say that a hippo's tail is always stiff. It doesn't stiffen. In other words, it can't relax and then stiffen. It's always stiff. And then, of course, we know that the elephant has a fly swatter. This is what you'd have to do. Okay, this is complements of answers in Genesis to make it work. Okay? So if we're letting the Bible speak for itself, it's much better to see it as the greatest of the creatures that God made. The largest animal to ever live is a dinosaur as far as length is concerned. They found dinosaurs that are bigger than the blue whale as far as length. Some of them are now estimated to be about 150 feet long. Now, the heaviest, largest animal is still the blue whale. A land animal couldn't be as big as the blue whale because its bone structure couldn't support the weight. But since the blue whale is in the water, it can. Okay? One writer who doesn't argue it's a dinosaur, needlessly, he goes on and says, first does not mean that chronologically the behemoth was the first to be created, but that is the chief or the mightiest of the animals. That's not true of the hippo. So what they say is that's the largest one that Job would have known about. Another one says that this solidly constructed beast, because it talks about its tubes of bronze and things, are the first of God's way, had the crown of the animal creation. Well, that's not true. How about that? That's an African elephant, the largest animal on the earth today. And yet it's just a little speck next to some of these dinosaurs. Okay, they're huge. Huge. And the largest one isn't even in this picture. But an elephant would have to be careful that it didn't get stepped on by these dinosaurs. Sometimes they weighed as much as 10 times what an elephant weighed. Okay, another one is in the next chapter, Leviathan. And it has a lot more information concerning it. We'll just read a few verses. Job 41, verse 1. Can you pull in the Leviathan with a fish hook or tie down its tongue with a rope? Can you put a cord through its nose or pierce its jaw with a hook? Will it keep begging you for mercy? And then it goes on, it talks about the fact that its skin can't be pierced. And some argue that it's myth because it talks about, like shoots fire out and sparks and these sorts of things. Verse 12, I will not fail to speak of Leviathan's limbs, its strength and its graceful form. Who can strip off its outer coat? Who can penetrate its double coat of armor? Who dares open the doors of its mouth, ringed about with fearsome teeth? Its back has rows of shields tightly sealed together. Each is so close that the next that no air can pass between them. They are joined fast to one another. They cling together and cannot be parted. Its snorting throws out flashes of light. Its eyes are like the rays of dawn. Flames stream from its mouth. Sparks of fire shoot out. Smoke pours from its nostrils as from a boiling pot burning over reeds. Its breath sets coals ablaze. And flames dart from its mouth. The strength resides in its neck. Dismays goes before it. The folds of its flesh are tightly joined. They are firm and immovable. Its chest is hard as rock. And then it continues on and on and on. Now, everyone agrees that there's poetic language in this section. Even liberals have argued that a real animal is in view. So those who argue that it's a myth are in the vast minority, even among liberal scholars, because Job has just talked about land animals like the ostrich and others, and there's no indication here that he is talking about anything other than a living animal. And so nearly all commentators argue that this is a crocodile. One argued it was a whale, another a dolphin, some an extinct marine reptile, so this would be one of those dinosaurs that's in the water. Again, Elmer Smick, mythopoetic, and then myth. Does that sound like a crocodile? Well, let's consider a few things. One, crocodiles do not cause the same level of fear as apparently Leviathan did, where everything, including all the animals, were completely terrified of it. If you go online or watch the nature programs, it's nothing for a lion to go and kill a crocodile. Crocodiles are scared of lions. Hippos are not scared of crocodiles. In fact, it's the other way around. Crocodiles stay away from hippos because hippos, their mouths are so large that they'll actually kill a crocodile. So there are elephants just walk right by all the crocodiles and the crocodiles leave them alone. They might snap at their tails a bit, but the crocodiles kind of stay away from the elephants. So according to the text, everything's in fear and awe of this thing. Well, that's not true. That's not true at all. More importantly, crocodiles live in swamps and rivers and shores, whether in verse 31, it says that it dwells in the deep. That's the ocean. Now, if we're going to argue that it's some kind of crocodile, then it would be an extinct one that supposedly went extinct millions of years ago. The green one at the bottom, that is the saltwater crocodile. That's the largest crocodile in the world today. So when you watch the Africa programs where you see these giant, giant crocodiles, that's the little guy at the bottom. These are extinct extinct crocodiles that they found. And some of them now are 40 feet long. They're enormous. So if we're going to argue for a crocodile, and I still don't think we should because it mentions the deep, then it would be something like this, which is enormous. At least twice the size of the biggest living crocodile nowadays. And they found complete jaws and things of this. Maybe it's a plesiosaur, which is a type of marine one. The picture in the second one is a killer whale, which we would think of as an enormous killing machine. In fact, they kill great whites. But this is a plesiosaur, which has teeth in its mouth, and it breathes air, has flippers, and it's about twice the size of a killer whale. So maybe it's a plesiosaur. They found one in 2009 in Great Britain. Its skull length, so just its jaws, were 7 feet 10 and a half inches. Its body length was 52 feet 6 inches. This is massive. This is bigger, by the way, than a T-Rex. Its jaws are bigger and its length is bigger than a T-Rex. So this is a swimming T-Rex. Maybe it's this guy here. Now, that kind of looks like a barracuda or a something like that. But this guy's over 49 feet long. It's called a mosasaur, and this is a particular type of one. This is basically a swimming eating machine. So these are probably better understanding. By the way, scientists argue that it's not impossible that it could breathe fire of some sort. Now, they don't believe it, but they say it's not impossible. Because, for instance, there's an animal called the bombardier beetle that actually has in its abdomen, it has two chambers with two different chemicals. And it has the ability to shoot them out like a machine gun. It just shoots them out, rat-a-tat-a-tat-a-tat. And they actually hit in air, and they're about twice the boiling point of water when they hit. And it actually just burns whatever it hits. So these things are incredible, and that's just a little machine. The engineering in the electric eel, for instance, that it's in the muscle tissue that it generates this electric current. So they've actually found a skull of a dinosaur that had an opening in its skull, and some have argued that maybe something like this was where it would generate. All they need is an igniter because all animals produce methane gas. And methane gas is highly flammable. So all you'd need is some way to ignite it, which could be another chemical. So to argue that there couldn't be some kind of fire-breathing thing actually isn't proven to be impossible at all. If God can do these other things, he could certainly make a fire-breathing dragon if he decided to. Okay, if you've seen the second Hobbit movie, it's not like that. Where the dinosaur goes around, or the dragon goes around just shooting flames at everything that it wants. Now, the heart of the issue is we're dealing with evolution versus creation. So did dinosaurs really go extinct 65 million years ago? Now, this is where I want you to pay careful attention. Because when you're talking to little Johnny or little Susie, and they're told at school that dinosaurs died out 65 million years ago, you can tell them that that's a bunch of nonsense. For some time, they've found what they call soft tissue in fossils. What this is when you go and you find a fossil, it's actually not bone anymore. It's actually rock. It's called permineralization, what means that every organic molecule is replaced by a mineral. So it has the same shape and everything as a bone, but it's actually rock now. And this takes some time for this permineralization to happen. But these dinosaur fossils, not just in dinosaurs, they found it in all kinds of other things as well. They've actually found that much of this is still soft. It hasn't. It is actually the original tissue. So they found collagen, elastin, osteocalcin, hemoglobin, laminin, histone, DNA, and hemoglobin. I got two hemoglobins there. Okay. So in the least, you know what hemoglobin and DNA are. These are organic materials, and the others are as well. They found osteocalcin. They found osteocytes, which are bone cells. And they found other things as well. And they found more than these. The problem is they've done studies on this, and they find that these things deteriorate very, very quickly. It became very famous in 2005 when Mary Schweitzer, they had found out in Montana a giant T-Rex. And the bone got broken up, and she took a sample of what was inside. And by the way, she had asked Jack Horner, the most famous dinosaur finder in the world who she was working with, why this area called Hell Creek it smelled the way it did. And she said it smells like death because the fossils are so fresh there, and they're supposed to be millions and millions of years old, that it smells like rotting animals, which is interesting because they just deny that it's actually rotting. So anyways, she had found when this bone was broken open, this T-Rex bone, she took samples and she looked it under a microscope and she found stretchy tissue. You can go online and you can actually Google it, and she actually shows a video of her actually doing this. But they found blood vessels and they took tweezers and they pulled it and it went and snapped back. How does a blood vessel that's 70 million years old, that's how old they date this, still snap back? They look closer. They found what looked like blood cells still in it. Blood cells, she said, you stick a petri dish with blood cells on the counter, and within a week, it's disintegrated into nothing. Yet they believe that somehow this has existed for 70 million years. So she's done all kinds of tests because nobody believes her. Okay, more and more are starting to because they have to. But when she first started doing this, she sent off an article with some collaborators to a peer-reviewed scientific journal. And one of the reviewers said, I won't accept your conclusions. And she said, what evidence would you accept? And he said, none. He's saying, this is impossible, and I don't care what you tell me. I will never, ever, ever believe this. They're closed-minded to the data. Now, Mary Schweitzer should be saying, these things aren't 65 million years. Now they're just trying to find a way to make this stuff last. And so they're coming up with all kinds of stuff. So one of the things they've looked at is collagen in there. This is a type of tissue. And they've looked and they're finding that in a large, large dinosaur, all the collagen in it, the maximum in a laboratory setting would be 1 to 2 million years. Yet they're dating these things as 70 million years. Yet in lab conditions where they're protecting it from all the elements, 1 to 2 million years is the longest possible. And yet they're finding this in dinosaur bones. So the studies on collagen are saying the upper limit is 1 to 2 million years. Well, that's about 35 times higher. The date that they're giving for the dinosaurs is 35 times higher than the supposed length of this. Now, that's just one. A better example is when they looked at DNA. And people have looked at DNA and its decay rate. In other words, how fast it breaks down. And the limit for it is a lot shorter. For instance, DNA should fall without of detectable limits within about 10,000 years. Yet in source after source after source, they're finding chunks of DNA in these fossils, and the upper limit is 10,000 years. Why are they still holding on to the millions of years when the lab studies are showing that under ideal conditions, 10,000 years is the upper limit. Now, another one I put on here is carbon-14 or radiocarbon. Carbon-14 is a radioactive type of carbon. Normal carbon is carbon-12. So it has 6 protons and 6 neutrons in it, so you get 12. When cosmic rays come through the atmosphere from outer space, they collide with elements and they knock neutrons free. And these collide with nitrogen and they form carbon-14. And carbon-14 falls to the ground. It's absorbed by plants and a little bit by animals and humans through our skin, mostly in plants. And what happens is we eat the plants, we ingest the carbon-14. They're able to figure out that the ratio of carbon-12 to carbon-14 in the Earth right now is about a trillion carbon-12 atoms for every one carbon-14. They know how long it takes for it to decay. In other words, for the carbon-14 to change into something else. It changes back to nitrogen because it's not happy. Radioactive stuff's not happy, so it wants to change into something else by spewing off particles. That's why it's dangerous to be around radioactive stuff, because it's shooting out stuff that damages you. So like gamma radiation and electrons and different things that they shoot out. Anyways, when something dies, it stops ingesting carbon-14. So they can tell by the ratio that's in that animal or plant how long it's been dead because of the ratio of carbon-12 to carbon-14. Everybody following me? So all they care about is the ratio, that 1 trillion to 1. If it becomes 1 million to 1, then they're able to tell how long that it's taken for it to change. They actually have machines now that are so sophisticated that they can actually count individual carbon atoms. So what they do is they take the sample, they shred it up into dust, and then they shoot it through this machine at really high speeds. And because carbon-14 is heavier than carbon-13, and carbon-13 is heavier than carbon-12, when they shoot it around the corner, because they put a bend in the machine, that the heaviest stuff flings out to the outside, and then the next, and the next, and then they end up in different areas, and they can actually count the individual atoms. So this machine is incredibly accurate. So the science behind carbon, as far as counting the atoms, is dead on. It's dead on. Now, the detectable limits on carbon-14 are 100,000 years. Anything that has carbon-14 in it cannot be older than 100,000 years. After that, it's called carbon dead. There's zilch. In fact, using the calculation, if every atom on planet Earth was carbon-14, within 1 million years, there would be zero carbon-14 atoms left. So if they test stuff and it has carbon-14 in it, the oldest it could be, because we're not dealing with something the size of the Earth, we're dealing with small things, is 100,000 years. So how much carbon-14 should there be in dinosaur bones? Okay, these are millions of years old. So, and everybody says none. It should have been gone millions of years ago. Should have zilch in it. Well, they have had all kinds of them tested, and they're getting dates in the thousands of years over and over and over and over again. They shouldn't be in any of them, and yet they're finding them over and over and over and over and over and over again. A couple of years ago now, there was a conference, a geophysics conference over, I believe it was in Singapore, and some PhD scholars who are evolutionists did a presentation on finding carbon-14 in dinosaurs, in the bones, and they cataloged all the information. And when the organization found out their conclusions, they removed their paper from their website, and they had videos of everyone, and they removed it too. And they said, your conclusions can't be right, so we're pulling it off. That's science, folks. We call that censorship. Thankfully, you can go and watch about 16 minutes of the presentation online because somebody who was actually at the conference had their camera and recorded it. And the abstract is still available to people who had the things, but they're censoring the data. So now what's happened is creationists who have dinosaur fossils, they're sending them to the laboratories and they're getting them all dated, and the laboratories don't know what they are. So they're sending the stuff back and telling them how old. And every single sample that's been sent in has carbon-14 in it. So, did dinosaurs go extinct 65 million years ago? No. Because collagen dating tells us that the upper limit is 1 to 2 million years. DNA data tells us that the maximum age is 10,000 years. Carbon-14 dating tells us that the upper limit is 100,000 years. By the way, when you throw Noah's flood into the carbon-14 dating, since all the plants and animals were drowned, it actually changes the carbon-14 dating, actually brings it way, way, way down. So if they say it's 50,000 years, it's actually more like about 3,000 years. Because the Noah's flood would have drastically changed the ratio of carbon-14 to carbon-12. If you have questions on this, you can ask me later on. But this is just some of the scientific data that's coming out, and more. Now, if you go online, you'll probably see that Mary Schweitzer in 2014 has published a paper saying that iron can preserve this organic material to make it last. Now, that doesn't deal with the carbon-14 issue or the collagen issue. It deals actually with just red blood cells, because they argue that in hemoglobin, there's actually iron in there, and it's needed to have the so that it can grab onto oxygen and let it go, these sorts of things. But anyways, their study shows that they can make it last 2 years. 2 years, 70 million years. Okay, so for her to argue that iron comes to the rescue just because it can sit on a table now instead of a couple of days, now it can last a couple of years. That's a long way from outside, not in a laboratory, and millions of years. And by the way, a lot of the organic materials they found don't have any hemoglobin in it anyways, so there wouldn't be any iron present. Okay. Are there other evidences? Actually, there are. There are legends, stories, and artifacts. I mentioned at the beginning, if dinosaur bones were first discovered in the 1820s and nobody knew that dinosaurs existed before that, how could humans living before that know what they looked like? By the way, it takes anatomists to actually know what they looked like, because the bones don't have the flesh and the muscle and different things to figure out what their shape looks like. It's just a bunch. If you found scattered bones on the ground, I don't think there's anybody in this room who'd be able to put it back together properly and figure out what it looks like. With skin and muscle and fat and all these things on it. And by the way, they usually only find a few bones. So most of what you see in the museums isn't real. It's fake bones that they've made to fill in the pieces. Now, there's a Scandinavian story of Beowulf. And Beowulf actually gets into a fight with some dinosaurs, and this was understood to be true. The epic Anglo-Saxon poem Beowulf, by the way, if you want to go to sleep, read it. It's long and boring. No offense to the author intended. He killed a monster named the Grendel and its supposed mother, as well as several reptiles, but eventually lost his life at the age of 88 in the process of killing a flying reptile. Apparently this flying reptile was venomous, and he got bit and he died from the venom. The Saxon description of this creature fits that of a giant pterosaur. It was 50 feet in length, which may be a reference to its wingspan. The monster called Grendel, which Beowulf killed many years previously, is described as follows. He was apparently a youngster, having been known for only 12 years, man-like in stance, in other words, bipedal, standing on two legs. And he had two small forelimbs that the Saxons called arms, one of which Beowulf tore off. He was a muthbona, which means that he was somebody who slew with his jaws. and his skin was impervious to sword blows. Sound like anything you've heard of? Remember the little forelimbs? By the way, they're not even sure what T-Rex used his arms for because he can't even reach his mouth. These little things. That sounds like something like a T-Rex. And there's lots of those like T-Rex. So how does somebody back then even describe something like that? Now, he mentions the flying one. This is an illustration of a Quetzalcoatlus, which is the largest pterosaur. 40-50 foot wingspan. A flying reptile. And they found fossils of these things. That's a supposedly a 6 foot man there. And that's how big this thing is. Okay, its wingspan is that of a small airplane. So that might be when he's talking about this one that's 50 feet across. That may be what he's describing. By the way, the American Indians, the Native Americans in the U.S., they have stories about these birds. They didn't call them that. They called them thunderbirds. They said they only came out during the thunder. And in fact, even in the 1800s, there was a story published in one of the newspapers of a couple of cowboys that were chased by one of these and shot it down and killed it. Now, there are hundreds of these stories, by the way, and you go online and evolutionist after evolutionist after evolutionist talks about what they call the ubiquity of these stories. Every continent on the earth except Antarctica has stories about either flying dinosaurs or ones in the water or regular dinosaurs that over and over again, they say these stories, yeah, everyone has them, and they all describe these things exactly the same, but they can't be true. Well, Carl Sagan, one of the most famous atheists of a generation ago, he took this so seriously that he wrote a book about it called The Dragons of Eden. And he said that on page 149 of the book, he said the pervasiveness of dragon myths in the folk legends of many cultures is probably no accident. And he's echoed by scholar after scholar. Yet, what do we do with it? Well, rather than accept the possibility that such creatures actually existed, Sagan felt obliged to explain them away. One person commenting on the book, Peter Dickinson, said, Carl Sagan tried to account for the spread and consistency of dragon legends by saying that they are fossil memories of the time the dinosaurs come down to us through a general mammalian memory inherited from the early mammals, or our ancestors, who had to compete with the great predatory lizards. So he argued that there were some mammals living at the time of the dinosaurs, and as those things evolved, we inherited their memories. And so people have memories of dinosaurs that their mammalian ancestors living millions of years ago inherited. Now, anybody smell any nonsense here? And this was published to try to fix the problem. Herodotus, a historian who lived several hundred years before Christ, describes going over to Arabia. And he went and he talked about the Persians and all kinds of places. He went around, traveled and talked to people. And he's a well-known, famous historian, considered by many the first true historian. And Herodotus talks about going to Arabia, and he actually describes these flying dinosaurs that he saw, these flying reptiles. And he describes what they look like and the size of them. He says they were just on heaps. There were so many of them. And I didn't have it here. There's a story told by Josephus about Moses, that he took the Egyptian army before he was involved in with the Israelites, and they were going to an area, and there was all these flying reptiles there, these pterodactyls, these small ones, and he found out how to defeat them. And there's Egyptian stories that tell the same thing. Apparently, there was this bird called the ibis that is much larger than these things, and it actually attacks them. So Moses and his army brought baskets with these ibis birds in them, and when they flew by, these flying reptiles, they let the ibis out of the baskets, and they flew and they killed all these flying reptiles. And there are several traditions that these people were living in different geographical areas, so they wouldn't have known each other that are describing the same animals. And they found all kinds of fossils of these small dinosaurs, which they're just small flying reptiles. He even describes that, and if these things went extinct millions of years ago, all they would have found was the bones. Yet he says they didn't have feathers like birds. Herodotus tells us this. But he said that their wings were like the wings of a bat, which have a skin membrane on them. So he even describes what they look like. Marco Polo, who went around traveling about 1200, went around, and he describes encounters as well. Alexander the Great, recorded in a book, talks about the fact he went to an area, and there was a dinosaur in a cave that was worshipped by the locals, and they asked it not to kill it, and so they talk about its hissing and how everything was afraid of it, and went on. They found cave paintings. I'll try to show you a little bit here. This is one they found in the United States. And so this one here, everything else around it looks like regular animals, like antelope and things like that. But it's up on two legs, and it's got a long tail. So who knows? Maybe that's a dinosaur. Here's a closer one. This one's been enhanced. This one's found in Utah. This was a cave painting. Doesn't that look like a sauropod dinosaur? Everything around it is regular animals that they fought. Now, they're going to try to deny this, but experts have went in and... In Angkor Temple in Cambodia, they've actually found a temple that's dated around 1200 AD. And look what they found. There's a bunch of these on there. Now, if you were to ask a kid what that is, what do you think they would say? Does that look like a stegosaur? I bet you we brought the junior church kids in, they'd all say that's a stegosaur. People have been sent in. Okay, so dinosaurs were found 600 years after this, and there's a whole slew of these. And there's all kinds of other animals around it. Now, a little bit more on how they deal with this. To make fun of us, to say that it's not true, they say stuff like this. Sorry, guys, but there's just no room. So they have a little bathtub boat, Noah's Ark. And so they say, well, you guys want to have your dinosaurs, but you also want your flood, and they couldn't fit on the boat. So, you know, we're right, you're wrong. Or they'll do this. You can't get that on there. People have looked at this question. By the way, Noah's Ark is enormous. Noah's Ark is between 450 and 500 feet long. Depends on how you interpret the cubit there, which is anywhere from around 17 inches to 20 and a half inches. So it affects the length and height and width. In Kentucky, the Creation Museum is building a life-size replica of Noah's Ark. It's going to cost about $25 million, and they apparently have enough money now to begin. And it's all going to be made out of wood, the old-fashioned way. So if you want to find out how big it is in a year or so from now, you can head down there and see how big it is. Now, how do we answer this question, though? Because if I'm telling you that people have found evidence of humans and dinosaurs living at the same time. For instance, there's all these epics that talk about people fighting them. So there's St. George and the Dragon. There's a famous, in Carlisle Cathedral in England, there was a famous bishop, Bishop Bell, who was buried right in the floor. And around it is these brass ornamentations, and there's all these different animals. And there's a series of them what looked like this type of dinosaur, the long-necked sauropod there. They found an Egyptian monument that has somebody holding these dinosaurs that look like they're fighting. They found these Ica stones. Some of them have proven to be frauds because people are making money, but some of them aren't. And these are hundreds and hundreds of year-old stones that have paintings of dinosaurs, figurines that are especially in China. Going back, China actually had an official position that was to look after the imperial dinosaurs, the dragons. So there's legends everywhere that describe this. Now, how do we fit them on the ark? Well, they're going to tell you there's about 600 types of dinosaurs. That's actually not true. There's 600 names of dinosaurs. But the Bible says that about kinds, not species. So they're going to have all different types of ceratopsian dinosaurs, so triceratops, and they have torosaurus and all these other ones. But they're all the same kind. In other words, one gave birth and there's diversification. So there's actually only about 50 kinds of dinosaurs, so you only need about 100 of them on the ark. Now, I know there were some that are 150 feet long, but dinosaurs are reptiles, so what do they come from? They come from eggs. The maximum size of an egg that's physically possible is about the size of a football. Because the embryo inside needs to get oxygen from the outside, if it gets any bigger than that, then structurally, in order to support its weight, the shell has to get thicker and oxygen can't get inside. So even the biggest dinosaur came from something this big. Now, I didn't put it on my slides, but some evolutionists have looked at the bones of some of these dinosaurs, and they can actually look at the growth rings in them, so kind of like a tree. They can count, and they can see the growth patterns. And it seems what's called a sigmoid pattern, so it's an S-shaped pattern, when they graph the growth pattern of dinosaurs. And dinosaurs seem to grow for the first few years really, really, really slowly. Then when they become basically like teenagers, they sprout up almost straight up. And then they level off. So it's kind of an S-shaped pattern. So if the Bible says that all the animals were put on there, two of every kind, and then of the clean, seven pairs of them, or God said that they're there on the boat so that when they got off, they would be fruitful, multiply, and fill the earth. So it's a survival mission. So is God going to take the oldest ones that are past the reproductive stage, that are the big giant dinosaurs? Or is he going to take the young ones that are just about to come into puberty and have a whole life of reproduction so that they can be fruitful and fill the earth? Well, you take the small ones. And by the way, it's only a few of them that were giants. There was chicken-sized dinosaurs. There's little ones. In fact, they estimate that the average size of an animal that would have went on the ark is about the size of a pony or a sheep. So it's small. Some evolutionists actually did a calculation, and they figured that the boat could hold 70,000 animals. Creationists figured 16,000 to 20,000 is all there would have been. Now, some have done calculations based on 50,000 animals. If you put 50,000 animals plus all the food and water that would be needed, there would still be room for a whole bunch of people on the boat. It didn't fill it to capacity. So the idea was is that if people had have repented, there would have been room for them on the ark. So how do we respond to this? The number one challenge to children, to indoctrinate them with starting off with cartoons and the little books that they read that program them to believe in dinosaurs and millions of years. And you see things like Jurassic Park and these sorts of things. What do we do with it? Well, one we find is that the evidence that's coming in now that's really mounting supports that dinosaurs are only thousands of years old. If they're finding all this soft tissue and bone after bone after bone, and by the way, they weren't looking before. Now they're actually looking. So now they're sawing bones apart because they just assumed that there wouldn't be. Now they're carbon-14 testing it, some of them, because they thought it was so old. Why even check for carbon-14 if it's not detectable past 100,000 years? So now they're finding soft tissue, so that's stuff that hasn't become fossilized, which has limits in the thousands of years, especially DNA and the blood cells and different things. We're finding carbon-14, which puts an upper age limit of 100,000 years. We're finding that throughout the world, people have been describing these things long before people even knew they existed. In fact, there are supposedly eyewitnesses accounts of dinosaurs still existing today. Now, that's not very scientific, but people in places around the world in deep jungles, like in Cambodia and that are primitive people, have described what they've found. One they call Mukili Mumbembe, to describe, and they had it drawn out to like a forensic artist, and they described it, and it looks exactly like dinosaurs that they found. So there's the possibility. There's been eyewitness accounts, for instance, in the 1500s, in an anatomy book in Italy, that was a famous zoology book, and somebody had one, they were walking along, and it sprung out on them, and they killed it. It was just a little one. And they took it to this guy, and he drew a picture and described it. And everything else in his book is a regular animal that's perfectly described, and it fits with dinosaurs that they found. There's descriptions of dinosaurs still in existence by Aborigines in Australia. In fact, those of you who are from Great Britain probably heard of the Loch Ness Monster up in Scotland, in the lochs there, Nelly. Or Nessie. In fact, I mentioned the plesiosaur. They think it was a plesiosaur. It may be long dead now, but the descriptions of it. In fact, one person did a sonar thing, and they actually saw something go by really quickly, and they've never been able to find it since. But the outline was like a plesiosaur, and they found others of these throughout the world. So, you know, this isn't an airtight case, and evolutionists are going to have their arguments against it, obviously, but we don't need to be afraid when somebody brings stuff forward to say, oh, listen, you guys are bringing your own data in here, and look at what it's saying. It's saying these things can't be millions of years old. They just can't be. We're finding carbon-14 in it. We're finding soft tissue in it. You know, DNA fragments, proteins, stretchy tissue. The fact that people could describe in detail what these things look like before they were found. You want to come up with something and let people and hope 100 years from now they dig something up that looks exactly what you said it looks like? People had no idea of such things. None. In fact, people believed in the fixity of species before they started finding these things. In other words, they believed that no animals went extinct. Hundreds of years ago, they believed that animals didn't go extinct. And then they started finding out that they did. But they believed in what was called the fixity of species. So it didn't enter into people's minds that they might dig up some animal that they didn't know of. They thought everything that was alive, that God maintained them and kept them going. There were no new species. So people aren't just going to come up with this when they had a view that there weren't any new ones. Everything existed today that existed in the past. So this is the number one argument that is used by evolutionists, and they always paint these pictures of these brainless eating machines that run around and kill everything. You see those little arms there? That's what Beowulf describes as ripping off. So dinosaurs in the Bible. Well, the Bible actually, by the way, it describes pterosaurs as well. In Isaiah and elsewhere, it describes these flying reptiles. So even the Bible describes these things, the fiery serpents. By the way, the word fire there doesn't mean that they breathed out fire. It can mean shiny. And some of the descriptions of these flying ones actually show that they must have had some kind of skin that kind of changed the reflection of the light like peacock feathers do. It's a type of luminescence where people, if they want to spend lots of money on car paint, can get car paint now that has the light reflects off. It'll change color from blue to purple to green and these sorts of things. So they describe them as beautiful. So there you have it, folks. The number one argument for kids falls flat. So make sure that your kids know that people and dinosaurs lived at the same time. Because the evidence is strongly, strongly on our side. And more of it's coming in all the time. Okay, that's all I have on this. Hopefully it was helpful and we can use it to reach out to other people. But dinosaurs fit with the Bible. And to quote from Henry Morris, it's a young world after all.